79. I-64.
I have yoked Joyce's human character, Molly Bloom, to the prose of, e.g., the Encyclopedia of Philosophy, i.e., the finest prose style.
79. I-65.
Archer is just plain the best novel I have ever written. I am at the height of my power. It evolves through Mary and the Giant to Crap to Valis to it. The fact is, I not only know Angel Archer, Betty Jo, Connie, Cleo, Joan, and something more. My creation, born out of 35 years of writing. This book, Archer, the summation, back to Weaver's Shuttle, it sums up them all. From my first stories, when I lived in the same building that Monica Riley did, to Valis, never mind Divine Invasion. And I did this deliberately, summed up 35 years of writing. This David's Offer was the summation and victory of 35 years, not psychologically, but artistically. Not Mary and the Giant to Archer, but Mary and the Giant through Valis to Archer. Extraordinary.
79. I-68.
So where did she come from? I inferred her nature from the style. But when you read the book, you naturally get the opposite impression, viz., I had her in mind because I wanted her to be my character. I had to use her style of thinking. Yet that is not so. The style is everything in literature, fine. But in this book, my style brought a character into being. The origin of Angel Archer is in the style. Where did the style come from? It is a synthesis of a number of sources, my eclectic reading. Throughout the book, her compassion factor grows Bishop Archer's mind, intellect, which she had identified as something related to, like, analogous to her own, is, becomes, because it now is in Bill, the object of her compassion, loving kindness. Thus, she feels compassion for her own intellect. Hence, her own self as intellect, not to mention Tim. Her heart, compassion, agape, wins out over her mind, intellect. She, then, is the Buddha's bodhisattva. Turning her back from nirvana is her staying with Bill. Look how her attitude toward him evolves in the book from fear and dislike to respect to tender love in the end. It is as if she has become Tim's mother. She ministers to a ruinous way of talking as an affectation analogous to her own. The style created her.
79. I-71.
In the Bishop novel, I saw how style can give rise to a specific unique actual person, e.g. Angel Archer. So it is possible for verbal information to give rise, to create, give birth to, an actual concrete unique person who was not there before.
79. I-72.
There is a stupendous and obvious point I'm missing about Angel. It would, and I did, require an extraordinary viewpoint character to both intellectually and emotionally understand the Bishop. To do it adequately, he or she would have to be highly qualified in terms of verbal skills, intellectual comprehension, and tenderness. Otherwise, the lens that she consists of would be inadequate. Thus Angel, and hence the style, since it is her ratiocination, was in fact created by Jim Pike. She as interpretive lens would in fact have to exceed him in all respects. Thus Jim, not I, is the author of Angel Archer. From word 1, line 1, page 1, a certain unique formidable intellect and spiritual soul, equipped with common sense, but even more aesthetic love, would have to exist as lens. This is why I could not discard those opening 4 pages. And she is wounded due to his death. All these traits, and wounded too. Thus, as I say, I did not create Angel Archer. my understanding of and loving Jim did. So Jim, in a certain real sense, did. In the novel, I am true to the logic of fictional narrative technique. Tim Jim is seen always and only through her mind. Thus, Angel Archer is not my soul, but is Jim's. His monitor or recording angel, his AI voice, not mine. His anima or other, not mine. But in that case, how do I have access to her? Here is a vast mystery. I'm not sure I know the answer. Is my soul his soul? There is no doubt. If the three books are read, Valis, Divine Invasion, and Bishop Timothy Archer, it is clear that the parousia is here. Not a theophany is involved, but resurrection of a given man, not of Christ, which after all took place 2,000 years ago. This resurrection of Jim Tim is the beginning, and it comes trailing clouds of collateral verification, like spin-offs. These in all constitute vast plural indices of the parousia. Each novel, in turn, verifies and amplifies and explains the previous one. The dead shall live, the living die, and music shall untune the sky. Note: John Dryden, A Song for St. Cecilia's Day. End note. 79. I-74. Most amazing of all, I did not perceive in advance that Bishop Archer would be the third book of the Valis trilogy. In fact, I had conceived of it as repudiating the Valis notion's mysticism. But on the contrary, it nails the whole thing down and follows logically. In view of this, no wonder I turned down the Blade Runner offer to do the Bishop Archer book. It had to be written. To complete the total message with the given instance of a specific human returning from the dead, proving that the parousia is here. 79. I-77. At the very end of the Bishop Archer book, it would appear that Bill thinks he is not just Tim Archer, but Christ, the expositor. Thus, indeed, in no sense is he any longer Bill Tim, he is Tim Christ. This is certainly madness, but it raises the theological possibility that this is, the parousia. Yet Angel is right. Bill is destroyed in the process, like Nietzsche with Dionysus. So the ending is spiritually up and humanly down. 79. I-81. What I have shown is what the best intellectual mind, as correctly represented by a young Berkeley intellectual woman, can do and cannot do. It can go so far, represented by her abscessed tooth and the comedia night, but it can go no farther, as represented by her rejection of Christ. Yes, Christ, at the end. She walks away. This is a penetrating analysis of the intellectual mind, what it can do, a very great deal, and what it can't do, make the final leap. And she knows it. This is what the Bishop Archer book is about. Angel is a pure aesthetic intellectual, able to go so far, but unable to make the final leap to Christ. Thus Berkeley, as paradigm of the intelligent, sensitive mind, is both lauded and stigmatized. This is a fine book. It both praises and deplores, and correctly. Thus one deduces the existence of the divine by its absence, the failure of her final leap, i.e., my meta-abstraction. Thus, I was able to do specifically what Angel was not able to do. I left Berkeley. The topic is the limitations of the reasoning mind. Bishop Archer, as Bill, calls to her, but she does not hear. It is not reasonable. Angel fell short, missed the mark. And this is what constitutes sin, this falling short of the mark. Thus, this novel must end as it does. Bill may have made it, we can't be sure. But what we are sure of is that although Angel came close, she did not. Thus, I demonstrate the limits of reason. What is needed is an orthogonal breakthrough, which I achieved in 2374. Ursula K. Le Guin, is the basis of Angel. Many virtues, but in the end, self-limiting. The mind knows in advance what is possible and what is impossible. It is intelligent, rational, educated, and tender, but it is not devout. It does not know how to capitulate to the impossible and accept it as real. Thus, the novel is a damning indictment of pure intelligence, lacking faith. She is so close, but cannot make the final crucial leap. This does not deal with Berkeley except as a paradigm of reasoning. The intelligent, sensitive, educated mind, just how far can it go? The great quantum leap that I call the meta-abstraction is lacking, yet all the clues for it are there. It is, as she says, a machine. It plods on and cannot leap the crucial gap to foolishness, as it were. It cannot pass over from words, I am a word junkie, a word disease, to the supra or nonverbal, the purely conceptual and nonverbal, absolute abstraction. The paradoxes are obscured to her despite Barefoot's best efforts, i.e., the foolish come for the words, the wise eat the sandwich. The bishop is a topic in this novel only insofar as he holds out the gift of divine foolishness to her, which she, in her rationality, rejects at the end. She is the real topic. But the bishop offers the cure and solution, which she rejects. Yet she comes so close. She has failed. I must not regard her as a success. I must not strive to emulate her. I love her, but in the final analysis, I must reject her solution. It falls short of true comprehension, of an essentially irrational reality that is not available to linear reason. The ultimate mystery of reality eludes her. She would have to believe the impossible. Only when one can believe the impossible is one truly free of one's self-imposed prison, the BIP. One is pitting one's finite intellect against God, Satan's original rebellion redefined for the modern world. 79, I-86. Perhaps the great leap, meta-abstraction, is when we see the peak experiences as signs pointing to Valis, which in itself is unknowable, my surd. This may be my meta-abstraction, viz., suddenly you intuit that the peak experience, all peak experiences, are signs pointing to a thing, Valis, in itself, unknowable, and are not to be taken in themselves as real, but rather signify, i.e. point to, reality. Since they seem not only real, but ultra-real, then all at once reality is viewed as a signifier of reality, which reality in itself cannot be apprehended directly. And this may be what my meta-abstraction was all about, which explains why I can't put it into words, i.e. what I realized, since I realized only a sign, not the thing signified. This fits in with, e.g., Zen Buddhism, etc. Note. Here Dick confronts one of the fundamental debates in the philosophy of mysticism. On the one hand, some modern thinkers assert that mystical experience, here rendered in the language of the human potential movement as Maslow's peak experiences, enables us to transcend conceptual thought and to directly glimpse reality as it is. In contrast, more skeptical voices insist that mystical experience is, like everything else, a construction. Our groks are mediated by cultural expectations, conceptual filters, including linguistic signs, and the peculiarities imposed by the structures of human consciousness. Here Dick embraces this latter Kantian argument, but pushes it in the direction of more traditional claims of revelation. Peak experiences are not real in themselves, but neither are they simply projections or hiccups of the individual mind. Like everything else, experiences are signs. But through meta-abstraction, we can intuit them as a special kind of sign, an ultra-real or hyper-real sign that points not back to our own language or neural hardwiring, but to an ineffable ground that eludes both words and things. ED. End note. 79. I-87. So the meta-abstraction is the sudden insight that the most intense experiences with reality, i.e., that which is most real, is only an abstract sign pointing to an actual totally unseen reality beyond, which causes us to experience the peak moments for the purpose of alluding to itself, creating the peak experiences as an interface by which to register on us. Whereupon these ultra-intense experiences, taken to be ultimately real, suddenly become only signs, hence abstract, i.e., words about reality and not themselves reality. They merely allude to, but are not. They possess no sign. And yet they constitute the most compelling reality we know. Within the framework of this realization, the statement, a perturbation in the reality field, conveys everything in that reality is perceived as a field on which something beyond it intrinsically totally undetectable impinges, with the result that it, this totally intrinsically undetectable thing, becomes indirectly, inferentially known to us, as if it is signaling to us, but can signal to us only by perturbating the reality field. Thus, we must construe reality as a medium on which this thing registers and makes itself available to us, my surd. The implications of this are simply stupendous. This thing evidently cannot directly register, impinge on us. To suddenly grasp that we are compelled to give total assent to reality merely as a means by which we can inferentially know this thing, this may be the great leap, my meta-abstraction, as in going from two cows and two cows equals four cows to two and two equals four. It is an abstraction, and it does involve a sudden vast leap, like that of seeing the relationship between the word banana and a banana. The word points to the thing. 79. I-89. So to say the universe is info is only half the story, and the lesser half, the surd one, is not discussed. But Bishop is on the right path. Barefoot's speech for the foolish sandwich for the wise. It may not be possible to come any closer to moksha in a verbal presentation. Angel may be doomed because a book is words. Words stand in relationship to reality as signifiers, normal abstraction. Reality stands in relationship to X as signifier, meta-abstraction. What is this X? We don't know. We have only the signifier, reality. But if reality is abstracted into a signifier, we can fathom that it, reality, points, although we can see what is pointed to. However, this X perturbs the reality field, and so is knowable by inference, its perturbation of reality. It renders reality into a language. This is why I saw the plasmate, the set ground, and rest motion, and linking relinking. X was perturbing reality, causing it to be in relation to X a language, i.e. as the word banana is to banana. Thus, in these 7 years, I've only had half the picture, but sensed the surd. The AI voice has tried to aid me. The Tao? X does not exist. It is not real. Yet it perturbs reality and causes reality to impinge on us, compelling our assent. This is purposeful. My God, what is pointed to is Ubik. Lem's analysis of Ubik, uncanny one-way intrusions, and Overdrawn at the Memory Bank, and The Tibetan Book of the Dead, and my 10-volume meta-novel. Note: Overdrawn at the Memory Bank is a 1976 short story by John Varley. PBS adapted it into a TV movie in 1983 as part of the same project that produced the film version of Ursula K. Le Guin's Dick tribute, The Lathe of Heaven. End note. In 2374, I never saw the real world. I just saw our semi-real world impinged on, perturbed, made into language.